Welcome to Source Not Found, a show about the worst versions of your favorite things. Every other week, we take an IP, franchise, or fandom and expand it solely through its sequels, spinoffs, and side projects. My name is Beau Woodall, and you can hardly see those nipples.
And I'm Brandon June, and I endeavor in this ghostly little podcast to raise the ghost of an idea, which shall not put my listeners out of humor with themselves, with each other, with the season, or with me. May it haunt their houses pleasantly, and no one wish to lay it.
I made a nipple joke. Cool, man.
You know, I went classic Dickens.
Yeah.
We are not the same.
Dick and boob jokes.
His name was Dickens. Dicks and
Damn
boobs.
It. Fuck, I had it. God. Happy holiday season, everyone.
Happy holidays. It's a Merry Christmas on this one, because it is a Christmas.
This one is a Christmas carol. Yeah, this year, as opposed to examining a royal baby, we're covering...
Don't remind me.
Yeah, I know, I bet. We're covering Dickens' classic A Christmas Carol through the Bill Murray film from 1988, Scrooged.
I cannot think of a story that has been adapted more often than A Christmas Carol.
Nope. I got nothing.
I mean, not even just like direct adaptations, like A Christmas Carol, like explicitly.
Right.
Or like some derivation of Scrooge.
But like the idea of ghosts coming to a guy and being like, dude, you have to change your ways or you're going to end up like me, sort of thing. Like having to reexamine their life, their past, what could happen. Mm-hmm, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you have, like, loose adaptations, like It's a Wonderful Life, but even just, like, stuff that uses the general framework. Just to give you a little idea, I compiled a very brief list. This is just a fraction of some of the characters and franchises who have incorporated a Christmas Carol adaptation into their series or whatever it is.
Okay, cool. Can't wait.
We got Mickey Mouse, DuckTales, and Scrooge McDuck, you know, of course. Barbie, Family Guy, The Simpsons, All Dogs Go to Heaven, Scooby-Doo, Looney Tunes, Mr. Magoo, Star Trek, The Next Generation, My Little Pony, The Chipmunks, Gumby, The Jetsons, The Flintstones, Bewitched, Little House on the Prairie, Epic Rap Battles of History, American Dad, Dennis the Menace, Doctor Who, Aqua Teen Hunger Force, Family Ties, Sanford and Son, Sesame Street, The $6 Million Man, Quantum Leap, The Powerpuff Girls, The Smurfs, Xena Warrior Princess,
yep.
Animaniacs, VeggieTales, Arthur, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, Martin, Roseanne, Dora the Explorer, and Batman.
I would also like to say that two different iterations in Doctor Who.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, there's also a fan-made Mega Man game.
What? That's okay. Yeah. I'm in for that.
Yeah, I'm going to check that out.
There is a Doctor Who based entirely around the A Christmas Carol, but then there's also one that's just about Dickens and ghosts.
Oh, okay.
So, kinda?
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen, I can recall the Always Sunny one. I know I've seen a handful of these other ones as well, but I can't tell you which ones.
Oh, I'm sure I've seen a few, at least.
I have not seen the Xena episode. Do you know this one?
No, but I really want to see it.
next year?
Yeah, let's
next
do it.
Next year.
Okay, cool.
Xena Carol? Hell yeah.
Have you seen Scrooge before? Before we did this for the episode?
So I saw this movie as a kid, and then I caught, you know, portions of it on TV, you know, flipping around over the years. But the last time I think I sat down and watched it through, I was maybe, I don't know, 9 or 10 years old, I want to say.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Talk about a way to walk into this movie.
I didn't like it then. I did not like it as a kid.
I loved it as a kid.
Yeah.
I still love it now. I don't watch it every year, but almost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think I like it, but I don't hate it. sorry, we're back. You got me with Dracula 2000.
Hey guys, guess what? Business as usual.
No, I'm not too negative on this. There's a lot of stuff I like in this movie. I just overall, this is not going to be on my. It's not going to be in rotation. I'm not returning to this one next Christmas.
I think the reason it is for me is Bill Murray. Like, it's obvious that they're giving him free rein to improv as much as he wants. And I've been a fan, you know, Ghostbusters since I was a kid, like Caddyshack, whatever, like give me Bill Murray, Stripes, and I'll watch Bill Murray.
I mean, I totally agree. I love Bill Murray, and I love all those movies you listed, and especially like him in his like Wes Anderson era as well.
Yeah.
Big fan of all those, but I think that's the problem. I love just watching Bill Murray be Bill Murray, but it's sort of like a double-edged sword. It creates problems. It's enjoyable in the scene, but then overall, I'm not able to engage with the movie, or like what the movie is trying to make me feel, I don't feel, because he's so unhinged. You know what I mean? So, you want me to believe in the reality of this character arc, but he's so awful, like beyond just normal, like bah humbug Scrooge level. Like he's a fucking psychopath.
He's a villain, like very
yes,
much a villain.
And I cannot believe in this villain's reformation or the core goodness in this character that's brought out through his personal relationships at the end. I don't buy it at the end when he on live TV, like has his monologue. I don't buy it because of what I've seen in the character thus far in the movie. You know what I mean?
So I would, that actually brings to our, you know, Bo's data driven pre-movie discussion portion of today. It seems like a lot of critics agreed with you when this was released.
Okay.
Viewers, maybe not so much. This only has a 38 Metacritic score.
Oh,
it ain't great critically.
Yeah. Okay.
The movie was released November 23rd, 1988. The budget of the movie was $32 million, which I kind of struggle with. It made $13 million opening weekend and $60 million gross.
All right.
So not bad. Not a flop. Mm-hmm. Not a blowout film.
Yeah. And I guess successful on another metric, which is kind of a comeback for Bill Murray.
Yes, he had not done a movie since Ghostbusters.
He had done is The Razor's Edge, I think it was, which was just a complete failure. And then after that, he like left acting for like four years.
Study, like, and this was his
or something.
Yeah, this was his first like headline movie. Mm-hmm. Every other movie prior to this that he had done, it was an ensemble cast.
Yeah.
And I mean, honestly, you know, Double Your Money, he didn't do bad, but it wasn't the massive success that they were hoping it would be. They even used that in the tagline.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The tagline of this movie is Bill Murray is back among the ghosts, and this time it's 3-on-1. Or only this time it's 3-against-1 or something like that. Like, using the Ghostbusters clout as much as they could.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
So, that's all the money stuff.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Opening weekend, it was number 2 on the box office with its $13 million opening weekend. Number 1 was Child's Play,
okay,
which had opened the weekend before, which I don't feel is a fucking holiday movie. Like,
no.
And I'm going to go
maybe
through some
even
of the
less than Dracula 2000.
Yeah, no kidding. And I'm going to go through some of their budgets as well. Child's Play was made for $9
million. Okay.
3 was Ernest Saves Christmas. Back on the Christmas train. Everything's good. $6.5 million.
Hell yeah.
Number 4.
Just brief, I got to know. What's your favorite Ernest hijinks?
It may be Saves Christmas.
Yeah, I think I'm going Scared Stupid.
Yeah, Scared Stupid's good. That is just, that's just a good movie.
It's not.
I know. No,
it's
not. Number 4 was Land Before Time, which cost $12.5 million to make. And number 5 was a movie called The Accused. I don't know it.
I don't know.
I'm assuming some sort of like criminal drama. But it was made for $13 million. So there's your top 5.
Okay.
For those of you who haven't seen Scrooged, it is a Christmas carol told through modern capitalism and focusing on a television station, and your Ebenezer Scrooge is Frank Cross, who appears to be the maybe CEO of this like television conglomerate, IBC.
I mean, he answers to, I'm trying to remember his boss's name.
I don't remember the boss's name either.
Was it Preston Rhinelander?
Yeah, that sounds right. Preston.
Yeah, I got a list here of characters. But he's at least in charge of like creative, like he's the creative director of the network or whatever. Like he makes the choices on the
of like commercials programming level, and right? programming and who they get to fill in, and the whole thing is his baby.
Yeah.
And he's a bad person. And so let's Christmas Carol the hell out of him. And that's the movie.
Yeah. And like the first few scenes, like for a while, it's just like, yeah, he's a jerk. Like him firing, shoot, names.
Loudermilk. Bobcat Goldthwait. Who was giving me some hardcore, oh my God, help me out here. Lewis Tully in the Ghostbusters, Rick Moranis vibes.
Oh, yeah, I see that.
Like,
I see that.
If they would have told me that role was made for Rick Moranis, it would not have surprised me at all.
They need to put that on the poster, another tagline. And we've got
someone who kind of resembles Rick Moranis. He was the Keymaster, and now he's getting fired because he's a good man. I will say this about the beginning of the movie.
He doesn't have a key, but he's got a towel.
I don't even know if he got a towel out of that deal, man.
No, the towels are for friends and family only.
The film opens with basically introducing us to what is going to be on their TV station Christmas Eve night. And the first thing is a film called The Night the Reindeer Died, starring Lee Majors, the $6 million man, and he's got a Gatling gun, and he's trying to save the North Pole from insurgents. And I'm sorry, I would watch the fuck out of that movie.
Yeah?
Like,
I want to hang out with Robert Goulet down in the bayou.
Yeah, Robert Goulet, or
though.
What,
I
Bob
don't.
Goulet's Cajun Christmas? I think is what it was called.
Yeah, at first, like, it's kind of doing, what is that John Ritter movie? Stay Tuned.
Yeah.
With the satanic satellite dish he buys from the devil. And it's like a lot of just parodies of things like Dwayne's Underworld instead of Wayne's World or whatever. I thought, like, they were doing a bit of that, but it's very brief. They don't linger on that too long, like, just the straight up parody stuff. But, yeah, that is, like, the general tone. Until it doesn't want to have that tone anymore, I think this is where I struggle with it, right?
And then it goes hardcore, like, Bill Murray is a sociopath?
Well, I mean, that kind of... See, this is the thing, like, it's not even a character arc, it's like a character scattershot. I don't know, like a scatter plot. Because for a while, I am buying it. Like, him, you know, he fires, like, with abandon, and then he's just, like, he's in his office, like, looking through the telescope. Watching the guy he just fired cry on the curb and just like screaming to his secretary, like, towel, you know, and like, okay, this is like true asshole energy, but it's in the realm of like 1980s yuppie ad exec human asshole energy.
Right.
But then when he's actually just like screaming in people's faces, like unhinged, like the anger and the just like, it gets to a point like, oh my God, you're like, you are a sociopath.
Yeah, like telling his assistant she can't go home to her child,
you know?
To the doctor. Like,
yes. You know, and then they do these flashbacks and like, oh, but, you know, when he had long hair, he was a nice guy. You know, I'm supposed to buy it suddenly because he's got long hair. Like, there's no like change other than his hairstyle.
And was he a nice guy?
No, not really.
Like, it didn't seem that way. He just seemed a little less bad.
Yeah.
But he still seemed kind of like an asshole. Like, I wouldn't want to hang out with this guy.
Like, it's trying to do what Groundhog Day did, which Groundhog Day was successful.
Agreed. Agreed. I think which this is like, that, or Groundhog Day was the successful version of this.
Yes. It's like the same idea, like a reformed asshole.
Yeah.
But like, because in that movie, it's all within the realm of like normal human behavior. Like, yeah, he's a jerk. But you can see the glimmer of like his humanity. You know what I mean? And like the hard exterior he's created around himself to like sort of insulate himself against like rejection and stuff like that. You know, you can see the core of humanity there. This one, I think, is what you said before. Like, is Bill Murray riffing? And the thing is, like, that riffing is just sort of like unchecked, unhinged. So he's going to all these wild places. It's not a character study anymore. It's a series of bits, and the bits don't all assemble into a character that I can feel anything about, you know? And
agreed.
I don't buy it. Like, why?
Completely agreed.
What does Claire see in this guy? She's an angel. She's like the sweetest human I've ever seen. What? What? I don't buy it at all. And the fact that she keeps coming back to him, you know what I mean? Over the years.
So here's...
She can't get this guy out of her head? What? What is he bringing to the table?
Here's my problem with this entire film. And you brought up something that I was going to bring up anyway. And that is, it's like correlational relationship to Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
Bill Murray does not change in this movie until he is confronted with his own death.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's it. Even when he sees, is his name Harold? The super cute homeless guy who passes away in like the sewers or something.
Yeah, maybe Harold. We're good with names.
It's something like that. I'm pretty sure it's Harold, but I could be wrong. That scene gets me every time. Not because of Bill Murray's, like, affecting emotional performance, but the fact that he is confronted with this and he's still an ass. Like, it screams to me that this man is what everything, like, everything that is wrong with a human being is in this person at this moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, he's making jokes to a dead man about being dead.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not even in like a I'm trying to process this way.
Yeah,
it does feel like a bit where in Groundhog Day, when the homeless old man dies, it is an emotionally affecting performance because that character, like you said, has a core of good humanity in him.
Oh man, that scene that one kills me in Groundhog Day.
Yeah,
you know. Oh man. Yeah,
I will say this, though, I did cry at the end of this movie.
Yeah.
When the little boy talks for the first time and Bill Murray has already gone through this like long diatribe of what it means to be a good person and why Christmas is kind of like a good thing. That last speech is probably the biggest reason I watch this at Christmas, is because it's actually a good end of movie speech.
But I think we're going to disagree on that.
Probably, yeah. The little kid like pulls on his pant leg and talks for the first time, and like the mom's like breath gets taken away, and Bill Murray looks down at the kid and he's crying a little bit too. I don't know why, man. It got me real good.
I can see how it would. I can see that's what is trying to do that. But by that point in the movie, I am way checked out.
Right.
Because the movie is so cynical, you know, that it just takes all these wild turns. It's not like a gradual coming around to this character. It's just like cynicism until the end. And then the most like
cartoonish,
saccharine, schmaltzy final speech that I don't buy into at all. It's too much. Right. And it's
so,
just kind of cheesy to
so
me.
So here's my thing about the end of the movie. Yeah. I don't think it's real. Like, part of me thinks that Bill Murray died in that elevator. And this is like the last moments of his character, like a Jacob's Ladder situation or something. Like,
fuck.
Okay. Because the end of the film is so cartoonish.
Yeah.
They take over a TV station with a shotgun and a drunk man. They tie up a dude with Christmas lights. A woman then sexually assaults that tied up man in Christmas lights.
Yeah.
Bill Murray is found incredibly attractive by one of the solid gold dancers.
Mm-hmm.
And a young child overcomes a traumatic mental block at just the right moment. Like, the rest of the film is dark and cynical and makes you really question whether or not a human being can be good at all, outside of Claire, maybe. But the end of it is just so, like you said, it's saccharine, it's cartoonishly positive, but after the cynicism of the rest of the film, my broken soul needs that.
Oh, I agree. I think it's needed. I just think the way that it's executed is very contrived, and I don't buy it.
Yeah, that's fair.
But that's a really interesting reading, and maybe that would help me enjoy this movie, because I really like some of the, I like the weirdness. I really do. I like the ghost design, especially his dead boss.
Yeah.
That comes back. Like, that scene is awesome. It's great makeup effects. It's creepy. It's weird. It's funny. And the Ghost of Christmas Future, like, in the elevator, just, like, pulling back the cloak and just, like, the monstrous, like, faces within that creature and, like, going to, like, this sort of nightmare realm with, like, off-kilter camera angles and, like, in the crematorium. It's, like, kind of surreal.
Yeah.
You know?
Agreed.
So that lines up with your theory there.
I also like the fact that the Ghost of Christmas Future, I just noticed this time when I watched it, and I don't know why I hadn't seen it before, but did you notice, like, the TV screen that functioned as its head?
Yeah.
Bill Murray's face was always on it, going to and from scenes, but every time it came back from a scene, he turned more and more, like, into the Ghost of Christmas Future that he fears. Like, the head starts to, like, go back and forth, fluctuate between Bill Murray and the ghost as if they are actually one and the same.
Huh.
Which kind of lends credence to this absolutely half-baked fucking theory that I just came up with off the top of my head.
I'll take it. I kind of like it.
But, yeah. I really like that character design. I loved the imagery. I loved how it kind of made the entire thing skew from cynical realism to absolute cartoonish nonsense. Because the other two ghosts seemed real. Like, they could easily be people that you run into outside of the weird time travel shit.
Yeah, although I wouldn't want to run into the Ghost of Christmas Present. Jesus Christ.
Carol Kane, yeah. I'm your wife. I'm not a witch. I'm your wife. Yeah, her, from Princess Bride.
Okay, this is. I liked a lot about this movie. I hated that entire 7 minutes movie. I feel.
She did too.
Yeah.
Precursor to Trivia Corner a little bit.
So there's some good humor in this movie. Like, I like what this movie's going for. I really do. The 1980s, late 80s, yuppie culture, like you said, just like capitalism unchecked. We're still in like the glory days of that. There's no alternative. The end of history, American society. What does Scrooge look like in that situation? The sort of like cold corporate boardrooms. Like, that's where a lot of this movie takes place. And then the humor around that with like some of the parodies we mentioned with the Christmas programming, his boss coming in like, do you know that there's a huge proportion of our programming that's being watched by cats and dogs?
And cats. God, that's such a good scene.
Programming for cats. There's some really funny stuff here. And then certain areas of the movie, they don't know what to do, but they want to keep that tone. So it's just like, oh, we're going to do slapstick physical comedy. A lot of it. Like, here's the censor. Oh, whoops. The set's falling on her. Oh, this time a barrel's going to roll over her. Waka, waka, waka. And like the whole Christmas present ghost, like it's just her punching people and smacking people, and like it's not funny.
Yeah,
it's fucking cringe. It's just awful, and it just keeps going. It just keeps going.
That's like a 10 minute segment, and it's rough to watch.
Yeah,
but what sucks about that is the Ghost of Christmas Past is, you would expect the Ghost of Christmas Present to be a little more subtle in comparison. Like, the Ghost of Christmas Past was subtle. Like, going in, barely saying a word, even when Bill Murray starts to cry when he sees his mom, he just says, you know, like the whole Niagara Falls Angel, and repeats something that his mom said. Like, the dude is doing hardcore emotional damage to Frank slowly but surely. Then you have the Ghost of Christmas Present, and it's just this bullshit slapstick segment that does nothing for the story to me.
Yeah, no, it really doesn't. Like, I can see what the movie's trying to do in these segments, and it should work. You know, it should work for me to, like, for him to go visit his secretary and see what family looks like on Christmas. You know, because I found her and I found her family, like, very engaging. Like,
yeah,
I thought she's a great character. And I felt like that stuff hit, and the struggle with the kid, you know, seeing his father killed and then, like, losing the ability to speak. And, you know, there's something there. And, like, you get the scenes of her, like, escorting him off the subway and, you know what I mean, like, coming home late and tired in the cold to take him to the doctor. You know,
and
you see,
like,
the struggle of this family, and there's something there.
Even Christmas Present at that moment has a scene that made me go, oh my God, this character could have been so much more, when, you know, Frank basically says, like, is he going to get better? Like, you're a ghost.
Yeah.
Tell me this kid's going to be fine. And she goes, it's his choice. And at that moment, I was like, I bet there are scenes shot or character decisions made in the script that made this character that the whole way through. And I would have loved to see that. See, like, a Carol Kane dressed up as a fucking coked up ballerina with these weird oil slick cellophane wings, but the entire time it is this kind of, I'm omnipresent, not omniscient. Because I feel like that's kind of the thing with the three ghosts, right? You've got one who knows everything that happened, one that knows everything that's happening, and one that knows everything that will happen, right?
Right.
So having omnipresence as opposed to omniscience, and just like, I can't tell you if this kid's going to be okay. We can hope he will be. And I feel like that could have been super cool. And I mean, they could have done so much with it during, like, the Trivial Pursuit game with his brother.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Like, I don't know what the answer is yet because it hasn't happened. It's not happening yet. The answer isn't happening, so I don't know what the answer is. Like, you could build a ghost with depth through that entire sequence.
You could, or you could just get them tumbling around the set and smacking into each other and...
Yeah.
It just...
I mean, honestly, just play fucking Yakety Sax the whole time through some of these, like...
Seriously.
What should be deep emotional hits.
They should be, you know? Like, the things you're listing, like, yeah. And even the, like, the Christmas Past segment, like, seeing himself as a kid and his dad brings home just some wrapped veal for a Christmas present. You know, I wanted to choo-choo. It's like, no, this is veal. And, like, you feel, like, you see the poverty and you see the... You see this kid and you see the adult he's turned into, and you can see the origin point of why he is the way he is. And that's why I keep coming back to the idea. Like, again, I say this, I love Bill Murray, huge fan. And I think of a lot of what he's doing in this movie is funny. But again, these individual bits, like, was letting him just kind of do his thing, ultimately the movie's greatest weakness, because it works within these scenes. It's a funny scene. It's an engaging scene. It's a ridiculous scene. It's him just, like, going off. But when you try and build a movie or a character study or, like, some kind of emotional engagement out of all of these scattershot ideas and scenes, it just can't build anything that I feel any investment in. And that is essential for this story. I have to feel something. I have to feel that Scrooge reformation by the end, right? I'm supposed to feel, like, the magic of Christmas by the end of this. And instead, I'm just, like, really ready to turn it off. Like, I'm just, yeah, thank you. Finally, credits are rolling, because... I hate, one of my least favorite tropes is, like, it's not even just the fact that it's contrived and I don't feel it on that level, but just the way that every Adam Sandler movie in, like, the 90s through the early aughts ended, which is just, like, big speech at the end, you know, that kind of monologue that sums up everything the character's gone through. It's usually on TV, and then we're, like, cutting around to a bunch of, like, people in random locations watching the speech on TV, sitting on the edge of their seats, and then they all applaud at the end. And, you know, if his girl is in one of the rooms with an audience, they're all just, like, cheering for her, as happens in this movie. And it's like, none of these people know this guy or have any investment in what's going on. You know what I mean? It's silly. It's contrived. And sometimes if the movie's good enough or you care enough about the characters, you buy into it. you know? But sometimes you don't. I didn't on this one.
I think that's why my whole weird Jacob's Ladder half-baked theory, I needed it. Because I watched this today. I watched this for today, and I watched it like a couple of times over the past week.
Oh, wow.
Because I wanted to, I know.
Yeah.
I can't buy the Reformation because there isn't enough progress through the ghosts. Like, after every scene, you see a little bit of something, but not enough to think, oh, he's making progress. They are making progress with him. The only thing that scares him is his own mortality. That is the only thing that quote-unquote reforms him.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, that's some selfish bullshit, and that's all we've seen from you so far.
Yeah.
Like, even when he sees the love of his life, apparently, completely change her ways and herself, he makes a joke about it and says that was low.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, feel something.
I mean, that's an area where the movie really fails for me. That relationship, I don't buy at all. I don't get it. They have a nice meet cute, you know, they do. But aside from that moment, I don't see anything, any foundation for why these characters feel the way they do about each other.
Yeah, agreed. Nothing.
You know, I don't even like, she's not even a character to me. She's like, it's like manic, like pixie dream girl energy. You know what I mean? She's like, it's like too much. And again, I love Karen Allen.
Yeah, Indiana Jones.
I mean, she's great. She's doing, like, what she's written to be doing is not great, but, you know, she's incredible. And, like, you could just, like, her presence on screen, you can see why Frank Cross is, like, well, you would say, like, why he's enamored with her, but then he, again, abandons her at every turn. Also, like, okay, I had a question about this. Like, the pivotal scene in their backstory that's supposed to show, like, how, like, why they grew apart. Like, he was just too invested in his job and rising up the corporate ladder. And, like, you know, she comes to him in the middle of filming. He's, like, filming a program, and he's supposed to go with her to have Christmas dinner with some friends. But right before that, his boss comes in and says, hey, you're coming to eat with me. And he chooses his boss over his friends and his girlfriend.
Right.
What he's doing in that scene is not anything that sort of points to him rising up the ranks of this company. He's
at
in
all.
A fucking he's in a big mascot like fucking dog suit doing like a children's program.
He's a giant beagle version of Barney the Purple Dinosaur.
Yeah. Like, what is the connection with here? And then like, and then, yeah, he's the top of like director of whatever. I don't see the
I did also notice something else. There was a person in the bone costume.
No kidding. I didn't catch that.
I did. It was wiggling and moving like there was a person in it. I was like, holy shit.
It makes no sense because it also like his boss comes to him is like, you're eating with me. It's like that would make sense if he were like behind the camera or like directing this children's program. Like, oh, OK, I can see like he was directing children's TV programs. And then like he moved from that into like maybe adult programming primetime stuff. And then he became like director of like scheduling or whatever. Like, no, he's in the fucking dog suit. Sweating his ass off, and he pulls off the dog head, and then his boss comes over to him like, yeah, you're my number one guy. Like, what the fuck? Wait, what?
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Again, I hate it. Making correlations to other films in, like, the same sort of oeuvre, but the best way to look at, like, the trajectory of Frank should have been Mrs. Doubtfire. Like, you start off as, like, a voice actor, and then you become kind of, like, you get fired from that, so then you start wheeling around canisters of film, and then you play on set one day, and they offer you, like, a sitcom hole in, like, you know, whatever, and then there you go. That's how it kind of ends. But no, they're like, okay, you were the mailboy, and then you were a dog, and then you were director of marketing research. What? How?
The 1980s were a hell of a time. A lot of cocaine and a lot of
people
just
ended
up in places.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe didn't necessarily earn their way to. Yep.
Also, just look, I love a good cocktail. the sheer amount of alcohol that he drinks in this movie also may lead toward this whole Jacob's Ladder thing. Like, he may have just had, like, a complete fucking goner. Because he was pounding booze. I don't know how he was functional.
He should have been acting like Loudermilk, right?
Yeah.
Like, he's the one, he's got the drunk energy. A little too much of it, I would say. Like, he's a little too cartoonish with the...
Again, man.
He's just, like, swagging around.
The end of that movie being such a fucking Looney Tune, I don't know why it makes me happy, but I think it's because the rest of the movie is such a fucking downer that I'm looking forward to a not inappropriate Yakety Sax series of moments. I don't know, man. But what I do know is I may be able to give you some insight as to why some of the shit happened that you were not a fan of.
Are you saying you know stuff?
I do indeed. Grab your Christmas sweater. Let's sit by the tree. And I'm going to unwrap you some brain presents.
No, I'm going to settle back into this wheeled like office chair at this big boardroom table. Like, I'm feeling the cynicism in full effect.
Okay, cool. So, can you go ahead and pour me a Stolian tab?
Light on the tab, right? Do I have that right?
So light on just the tab. Like, holy shit. So I don't, okay. Before we go to our corner, we're maybe already in the corner. I don't know if the stinger is played yet. What is tab? I know it's like the first diet soda. But like,
oh, is it a diet soda?
Yeah, what does it fucking taste like? Have you ever had a tab?
I don't know, I feel like I can remember it, like, as a kid, like, seeing it. But,
I've seen cans
like
of it before.
Is it still around?
I think at, like, specialty shops or, like, higher-end groceries and stuff like that.
There's a couple, like, what was the other one? Shasta? Shasta?
Like, Shasta-Cola? Like, Moxie?
Yeah, I don't even know if these are manufactured anywhere still, but, like, I can visualize seeing the cans around as a kid, but I can't tell you.
I'm curious what tab tastes like now, because I saw like five cans of it and man, he was pouring it in vodka like crazy.
Well, I was going to say, if you drink it the way he drinks it, you will continue to be curious about how it tastes because you won't know.
Yeah, there's no way. So welcome to Post Trivia Corner, sponsored by Tab.
I know stuff.
I want to start off with something to make us feel good, because some of these don't.
Okay.
So I'm gonna try to sandwich some stuff in here to give us some positive vibes about this movie.
Yeah, please.
So filming this movie began in December of 1987, which, damn, that's a quick turnaround, huh? Released like not even a year later from when filming begins.
Mm-hmm.
With Christmas approaching, director Richard Donner asked if production could have Christmas Day off, but Paramount Pictures executives refused, insisting that filming should continue on Christmas Day. However, Donner outwitted them. Yeah, they literally got Scrooged. At the end of the day on December 24th, he fired the entire cast and crew.
Okay.
2 days later, on the 26th, he rehired everybody. The break allowed the cast and the crew to spend Christmas with their families.
Hell yeah.
That's pretty fucking cool. Like, let's stick it to the men as hard as we possibly can.
I like that. Yeah, we didn't really talk or dwell on the fact that it's directed by Richard Donner.
Yeah.
The Goonies. The fucking Goonies.
Yeah.
And Superman 2.
And his name is a reindeer. So, that's kind of cool.
Maybe it was his background being like tied to the yoke, just like being driven, you know, amongst his fellow brethren by Santa. They gave him like a sort of insight into the plight of the workers. That's why he's on the side of the working class.
Yeah,
that's
it's why him and Wolf Blitzen.
Sticks it to Paramount.
I was pretty happy with that. So apparently, Bill Murray and Richard Donner did not enjoy working together at all.
Well, okay.
I've got two quotes. One from Murray. When Robert Ebert asked him if he had any disagreements with Donner, Bill Murray said, only a few every single minute of the day. This could have been a really, really great movie. The script was so good. There's maybe one take in the final cut of the movie that's mine. We made it so fast, it was like doing a movie live. He kept telling me to do things louder, louder, louder. I think he was deaf.
Man, so that's not what I expected to hear. Was he pulling that out of Bill Murray? I figured it was going to be the opposite, where like Bill Murray wanted to do more, and Richard Donner sort of like tamping him down.
So here's the other quote that I pulled.
Yeah.
Obviously, Bill Murray improv'd a lot of his shit. It's pretty obvious on the screen.
Yeah, yeah.
In a 1988 interview with Philadelphia Daily News, Richard Donner discussed Murray's penchant for improv and described the experience of directing Murray as follows, quote, "It's like standing on 42nd Street and Broadway, and the lights are out, and you're the traffic cop." End quote.
Okay.
So, I mean, that kind of, to me, gives a little bit of an idea of why it seems so disjointed.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, there's probably a cut of this movie with how much is left on the floor that the bits are cohesive.
I wonder, yeah.
And, like, you get a steady progression of character from Bill Murray, but instead it's like, well, this bit's funny. And it, yeah. You know, it fits in here, so we'll do that. Two fun accident stories. No one seriously injured. Otherwise, I don't think it'd be funny. Bill Murray.
It's the censor.
Yeah.
Classic. Did you see that part where the set fell on her?
I mean, I will say, when she gets hit by the light pole, and then the dancers start, and he just, like, moves her head over, and the medic on set is like, no, don't. And he's like, see, look how good they look. This is great. Am I allowed to move her? No. Okay. And then he just moves her head back the other way. I was like, that's pretty good. Like that's
good. Yeah. It's just good if it's a Saturday Night Live skit.
Yeah.
If it's a bit. But again, fucking psychopath.
Yeah. Absolute maniac.
You can like hear her neck grind as he like jerks it. Yeah. You know? Out of position, like fucking Christ, man.
Bill Murray falling on the way out of the restaurant. After he throws water on the guy he thinks is on fire.
That looked like it hurt.
It complete accident. Apparently,
oh, no kidding.
Yeah, those stairs were wet after the water he threw on the waiter. And
yeah,
that's why the waiter is looking for someone to help him. Like completely unscripted.
I was very impressed by that fall. I felt it.
The
I
fact
feel
that he
fall.
Like the fact that he fell while he like slipped once and caught himself and then eats shit hard.
Yeah, and you see that ankle just like fucking looks like it breaks.
Gone.
I mean, it.
But he stands up and like fixes his jacket and like dusts himself off like the character would and then walks out. I'm like, that's a fucking pro. Like,
yeah, seriously.
There's a scene where he accidentally, okay, so two other accidents. We'll start with the one that's a little bit worse. When she when the Ghost of Christmas Present grabs his lip to stop him from talking, she apparently tore it so badly that production was halted for days.
Oh, shit.
That seems like it would really, really hurt and suck.
Well, at least the scene was so hilarious that it justified the physical pain that it took to achieve.
That's another one. Carol Kane has come out several times saying that she got, like, she had to take breaks and ask for time away from set. She would get genuinely upset about having to, quote unquote, rough up Bill Murray in their scenes together. Like, she hated every fucking second of it.
Hey, that makes two of us.
Yeah, no, it sucked. When Bill Murray gets scared of the fake Ghost of Christmas Future, and he accidentally hits his secretary, and she like touches her jaw and stuff, completely unscripted. He fell back and actually clocked her.
God, this movie was doing fucking damage, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolute damage. So obviously all of Bill Murray's brothers are in this movie.
Yeah,
one of them actually plays his brother.
Mm-hmm.
One of them plays his brother's friend at the party. And one of him plays his dad in the flashback.
Oh, yeah.
That's Brian Doyle Murray, I think is his name.
Yeah, right.
This is my last one. And it's honestly probably my favorite one. When he's walking down the street and he mocks some street musicians.
Yeah.
You may know two of these names and I don't, but I do know two of them. The leader of the musicians is Paul Schaefer.
Okay.
The guy playing the trumpet is Miles fucking Davis.
Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other two are David Sanborn and Larry Carlton, who I believe are both also very talented jazz musicians, but I am less familiar with their work, so I could be wrong there.
Yeah. Whoa. That's wild.
Yeah. Just Miles Davis and Paul Schaefer and Bill Murray's like, oh, you guys learned
just
the song
casually.
Today? Yeah. Like, oh, fuck off, man. Damn.
That's a pretty... It's a joke that I didn't get, you didn't get, and most people wouldn't,
mm-mm.
But that is pretty good, right?
That's
like,
very
to
good.
To kind of, like, reinforce the callousness of this guy and his sort of just the distance he holds himself at all of just humanity, right? He can walk past, like, some of the finest musicians, jazz musicians that this planet has to offer. And just, he has nothing but mockery and disdain.
Because it also seems like he does appreciate the like, good, like, higher-end stuff. Food, drink, you know, whatever. It seems like he appreciates shit like that, so you would expect him to also appreciate art.
Yeah.
But it seems like anything that comes with emotion, he can't appreciate.
Yeah, actually, it's not weird to me, because on the one metric, it's like carnal pleasures and like physical sensations. And the other one, it requires vulnerability, or at least like an engagement with your emotional self.
Like the spectrum
of
human emotion. Yeah.
Yeah. Good food is just, you know, you leave it at that. Oh, this is a good tasting thing. This is a good sensation in my mouth. And that's it.
But yeah, there's some other stuff about like how much they had to rework the script and, you know, how certain casting decisions were made and stuff like that. But those are the ones that I thought were fun.
Those are the ones that hurt.
Yeah.
Well, it shouldn't be a surprise to me that such a a movie that's just such a nasty movie, such a mean spirited movie should have such mean trivia.
Yeah.
Painful trivia.
Except for that first one.
Yeah, no. Yeah, no, that was great trivia. Thank you. I just mean, like, yeah, that hurt.
Yeah.
Some of that.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about the lip thing.
God, imagining someone, like, grabbing your lip and pulling it so bad it tears makes me, like, it's visceral. Like, I don't like it.
I don't like it. And I don't like the movie. You do. But we both agree that it does not achieve what it sets out to do.
Agreed.
It's
not
definitely mixed feelings on it at best.
It's not a good movie. I am relatively certain most of my like traditional viewings of it have become just a tradition and not because it's a good Christmas movie.
I could definitely see having nostalgia for it. And if, you know, like if I had liked it when I was a kid, I kind of just remember feeling... Yeah, like feeling bad and just feeling bored, honestly, as a kid trying to watch it. But I can see having nostalgia for it if it did hit at a certain age and returning to it, because there is stuff to enjoy. There is stuff I like about this. Now, some people liked a lot more than we did.
Really?
And some people do not feel it is quite as cynical or mean or ugly as we do.
Huh. Are we Frank Cross?
I mean, I definitely am. I bah humbug a lot on this show.
Yeah, it's true. But not in a mean-spirited way. You haven't said shit about Miles Davis.
No, I love Miles Davis. If peeing your pants is cool, consider me Miles Davis.
Yes.
No, wait, that's not a...
You just did, an Adam Sandler thing. What are you doing?
Adam Sandler's on my brain. It's not even an appropriate quote. Anyway, IMDb. I went searching. I only got a couple. Because they're really... I don't know. Most people just had, like, kind of general things to say about it. But I want to highlight at least... I want to highlight a few here. One from Popeye Kramer, March 31st, 2009. 10 out of 10.
Wow.
Whomever loves this movie is really cool people.
Ugh.
I don't know where this movie came from. The casting, the directing, etc. But all I can say is that this is truly a miracle movie based on the idea of miracles. For those with faith. For those who are responsible, sensitive, caring human beings. This has to be an amazing film. The message is centuries old. From the Bible and before on, the good messages are everlasting. Good and evil is a pretty clear-cut thing in life. They're very easy to tell apart to those who are as they should be. I love this film. If I could, I would rent a theater every couple months and invite all the people who get this movie to come truly have fellowship with one another. A great time had by all. Do yourself a favor if you're a person who relates to being a do-gooder. Check out this film. You shouldn't be disappointed. It's truly a miracle movie, and I'm still blown away that it was ever even made. Outstanding film. Thanks and God bless. MJK.
On the road to Bethlehem, the three wise men were confronted by three ghosts. Mm-hmm. Ghosts of Christmas, past, present, and future. It's in the Bible and before. He said so.
And they...
It's
they
obvious
came bearing gifts of booze and tab.
Yeah, booze, tab, and a bath towel. Jesus didn't earn a VCR. That's a weird kind of non sequitur. Do you know how much a VCR fucking cost in 88? I looked it up.
I know it's expensive, but what are the numbers?
It was like between $500 and $1,200, which today would be like around $3,000 for a VCR.
Yeah. No, you shouldn't tell me that. Now I'm feeling newly bad. We had a VCR. We got one. I want to say I was probably like 3 or 4. We had it briefly. I remember being able to enjoy it for a couple weeks until I had the idea to put a cheese sandwich inside of it.
I mean, it kind of looks like a toaster on one side.
I also ruined our toaster this way.
Yeah, of course you did.
No, I wanted a grilled cheese. So yeah. I just, you know, put it down vertically, two slices of bread and the cheese in the toaster. So doing cheese sandwiches, just doing damage. Wrecking the fucking house. Man, my dad must have been so pissed. I mean, I remember him being angry. I'm like so young that I don't really. I didn't really realize until now. I didn't grapple with just how much money I cost him.
I don't think we got a VCR until I was like 8 or 9. So that put us at like 93, 94. I think is maybe mm-hmm. when we got ours. So it'd probably be half that price by that point, maybe a little bit cheaper. But damn, not cheap at all. And yeah. Also, Mr. The dude you just did his whole fucking IMDb review about, he knows it's Dickens, right? Like, this is not a biblical tale of redemption.
Well, I think it's just Dickens seized upon the pre-existing struggle of good versus evil from the Bible. And
miracles.
Now we have Scrooge
happen.
Make it newly available in this outstanding film for all of us to re-engage with these ideas. These, I mean, sort of like in the collective unconscious, like the deep sort of fundamental ideas of humanity.
Interesting.
Right?
Yeah. Back when it was only oral traditions, and this has come from that.
We passed down stories around the campfire or monogrammed on towels. One of two methods.
Yep. Towels and VCRs, baby.
JS1 Art Glam, December 2nd, 2002. Two of the best lines ever. I know it's stupid to love an entire movie for just two lines. Actually, there are 100 good lines, but these are my two favorites. When Alfre Woodard?
I believe so.
Yeah, I didn't know how to pronounce her name. She's incredible, but I should know that. When Alfre Woodard shows Bill Murray the newspaper with the picture of the old lady who died from watching an ad on his network, and he says, "Who's she? She's pretty. I practically poop my pants every time." And when Carol Kane, as the Ghost of Christmas Present, says to him, "Don't vex me, Frank, or I will fix your mouth so it won't hold soup." I mean, come on! Classic!
Oh, is that it? Awesome.
That's it. That's enough. Did you poop your pants?
I do have a comment. She didn't show him that paper. The blonde executive did. So, dude, get your fucking two lines straight. Damn
well,
it.
They're probably just so doubled over with laughter. They don't even know where the line originated.
They
it's
are too busy sprinting to the toilet so they can.
None of those. Neither. There's some funny moments in this movie. Those two are not one of them. They're not two of them for me. No, I guess like the newspaper bit is kind of funny.
It's for me, it's whenever the newspaper calls him for a reaction and he's like, "I don't know, tell him it was something they ate." And she actually goes, What is wrong? We are saddened by this sudden and tragic, unexplained, you know, whatever.
It is brilliant how ready he's got like this sort of PR speech ready to go, you know, just off the cuff. That's a good moment. Yeah. But even that, not enough to make me go full doo-doo butt. But hey, for art glam, those bowels are ready to go.
I'm going to fix your mouth so it won't hold soup. And then I pooped.
I'll share one more. I just have to highlight this one because it contains three references to Pee-wee Herman.
Perfection.
This is from Ainsley Joe Phillips, December 6th, 2004. 5 out of 10. It's the title of the review is stereoded, but I think we just got a misspelling. Steroided. "Maybe I should give this one another chance, but I have other things to do right now and might not get around to doing so until hell freezes over or pigs fly. Let's put it this way. Scrooged is to A Christmas Carol what Pee-wee's Playhouse is to Captain Kangaroo. My impression upon watching it is that it's your typical movie on steroids that comes across so hyper that you like to grab a tranquilizer gun and shoot it a few times. I love remakes of classics, and I love good comedies. I personally find this one to be neither. Oh yes, people keep asking why this is called Scrooged instead of Scrooge. One reason could be because the main character isn't actually named Scrooge, but is given, or so they try to convince you." Sorry, I think we've lost Bo. I can't look at you while I read this.
Oh, man.
Hey, you're not the only one with theories on this movie.
This one hurts.
One reason could be because the main character isn't actually named Scrooge, but is given, or so they try to convince you, a storyline that makes them Scrooge-like or Scrooged. Then Scrooged sounds like screwed, as in the short version of.
This is, insane.
You're breaking me. I'm gonna just cover you for a second. I can't. Then Scrooge sounds like screwed, as in the short version of screwed up. If it's used in this way, they are telling you the truth about this movie in the title. It's a modernized story of Dickens' A Christmas Carol, but in that role, it's screwed up. That is a big mistake. I guess it's a matter of taste. If you prefer watching Pee-wee's Playhouse to watching Captain Kangaroo, you might think this movie is great stuff. However, I cut my teeth on Captain Kangaroo, and when I happened to tune into Pee-wee's Playhouse one Saturday morning several years ago, the 1980s, I think, it left me cold. I have some questions myself, but it looks like you do as well.
How do you get screwed up from Scrooged?
I didn't make it to that question. I'm stuck. I didn't finish my SAT in the allotted time because I'm stuck on the analogy. Scrooged is to A Christmas Carol what Pee-wee's Playhouse is to Captain Kangaroo. Like this sort of like, hey, carpenter is to wood as epidemic is to disease. You know, that kind of question. I don't know what to quite make of that. I mean, I get it. It's like hyperactive and you need to shoot it a few times with a tranquilizer. Get it just calm down.
Okay,
I've never seen Captain Kangaroo. I'm not.
That's where I got hit.
70 years old.
Was. I think this person just said you want makes you want to shoot a tranquilizer gun a couple of times in no real direction. Just like in the air, you shoot a tranquilizer gun because you need to get it out of your system.
I love that you're just going out back to yeehaw and just firing off a couple darts into the air as you do.
Just like, oh man, fuck me, I'm hyper. I need my tranquilizer gun. Pew, 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 straight up in the sky. I don't know what sound a tranquilizer gun makes. I assume it's pew.
I think of it like an airy fart, you know? Like a, just a pff. Just a little pff.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but I don't know.
That one was just chock full. Okay, I got it.
Yeah?
That review is to a normal IMD review as Pee-wee's Playhouse is to Captain Kangaroo.
I'm stuck on the Pee-wee to Captain. Like, do you know Captain Kangaroo? Have you ever seen this?
Yeah.
Oh.
I mean, it was on, like, in, like, what, the 70s, I think?
Was it? I don't know.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, he was...
I'm aware of it being, like, children's TV programming, but...
Yeah, kind of like a Mr. Rogers sort of thing.
Okay. Yeah. But it's wholesome and not... There's no, like, wacky hijinks.
I think it's supposed to be just wholesome.
Yeah.
Give me the hijinks.
Give me Pee-wee's Playhouse. I watched that growing up. I'm curious though, like, I don't know. Sometimes you read a review and, like, you know, they're written after the fact. I mean, this is 2004, so, you know, kind of removed from Scrooged. But, you know, the aughts, the early aughts is definitely like the heyday of IMDb reviews, I feel like. That's when we find some of the really good stuff. But again, just I happened to tune into Pee-wee's Playhouse one Saturday morning several years ago. The 1980s, I think. Again, this review was written in 2004. So, Ainsley, are you okay?
Yeah, I was going to say, man, Pee-wee really fucked you up, huh?
I've been waiting 20 years to hear that word of the day. And I still haven't heard it.
Just the idea of having a single episode of Pee-wee's Playhouse stuck in your head for like going on 20 years and you finally sit down and are able to put it into words and it's about the movie Scrooged with Bill Murray seems batshit to me.
I love that that's maybe the media experience that just broke Miss Phillips here.
Yeah.
Like you see that Pee-wee's Playhouse and you just like, I don't know, you just stagger out the back of your house and just sit down on the steps and just like consider the fall. We've finally seen it, the fall of Western civilization. We're here, just decadence and debauchery.
You pour one out, pour one of your vodka tabs out for Captain Kangaroo, and you go back in and know that nothing's ever going to be the same.
Yeah, how can we expect, like, there's no future for this civilization if the youth of America is growing up on this drivel?
How Pee-wee sad. Herman. Pee-wee, how sad that we have to deal with that, not Captain Kangaroo.
I mean, that's kind of all I have from the review side of the website. But, you know, I was curious because while looking for some reviews, I just found so many users who listed this as like their go-to Christmas movie or like one of their favorite Christmas movies of all time.
Okay.
So I had to check out what is IMDb's top 100 Christmas movies of all time.
Jesus. All right.
I'll tell you, Scrooge is in the top. Let's say the top 20. Where do you think it is in the top 20?
15.
You're close. It's 13.
Yep. Okay. Makes sense.
So I thought maybe like just do the top 10, but since it's number 13, I just thought let's take it to 15. I have the list here of the top 15 Christmas movies of all time as rated by IMDb users.
Can I make a couple of guesses?
I would love for you to do that. What do you think? I think you can probably get a lot of these, but...
I'm thinking It's a Wonderful Life.
Number one.
Yeah, with a bullet, I would think. How the Grinch Stole Christmas?
No.
Really? That's one of my favorites.
Yeah, that would maybe be on my top 15.
Miracle on 34th Street?
That's number 8.
Okay, I'll take that. The Santa Claus.
Number 14, right behind Scrooged.
Damn. Elf?
Elf is number 9.
Okay. I'm feeling pretty good about this.
Yeah, you're doing well.
Is Die Hard on there? Because that would be very
Die
funny
Hard
for me.
Is on there. It's number two.
Yeah. Okay.
IMDb. I like where your head is at.
See, now I'm thinking of bad Christmas movies that I love, like Jingle All the Way, and I'm pretty sure that's that's way down that list.
Yeah. Put that cookie down, way down on that list.
Yeah.
Think bad vibes. Like we got
bad
a cynical
Santa?
Bad Santa. I didn't mean to give it away.
Yeah, you said bad vibes, bud.
Yeah, bad Santa. Bad Santa is one. Does that one work for you?
Yeah,
I'm
it's
just curious.
Fine. Not really.
I've only seen that once, and I was under the influence of something, but I will say, like, the scene where he comes back, and what is the kid's name? Is it, like, Thurman Merman or something like that?
Something like that.
He, like, makes the... his hand is all cut open, and he's screaming because he was trying to make a wooden pickle.
Oh,
for
yeah.
Thorne's character.
Yeah.
I just burst into tears.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. Like, that movie made me so sad. I just cried my eyes out. And I don't cry at movies a lot. Like, the list is, like, a few movies, you know? It's like, you know, Ikiru. Just, like, it really affected me on an emotional level.
I cry all the fucking
film.
Time,
and fucking
dude.
Bad Santa, the wooden pickle. I don't know what it was, but, man, I couldn't stop crying.
I cry all the time at film and TV.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I've got a few more guesses. Home Alone.
Yeah. Home Alone? Yeah, number four.
Home Alone 2, Lost in New York.
Not on there.
Really?
Not in the top 15.
I think it's actually a better film.
Yeah? Home Alone would be my go-to.
What about A Christmas Story?
Christmas Story is number seven.
I'm running low. Oh, what about like Rudolph? Or
yeah, Rudolph is number five.
Frosty the Snowman.
Nah, no Frosty.
Santa Claus is Coming to Town. Is that one? Is that
no.
What it is?
Think we recently covered an IP from this creator.
House of the Dead by Uwe Boll.
No, sorry, that's number 16, just off the list.
Just off the list. Damn.
We just saw the sequel of your favorite movie from this director.
Nightmare?
No.
Or Edward Scissorhands.
Yes. Nightmare's a little farther down. Edward Scissorhands, number 12.
Hey, guys, you want to know something crazy about Bo? I don't think I've ever seen Edward Scissorhands.
What? Really? That
yeah,
surprises
I told,
me.
I told Kaylin a couple of days ago, and she stared at me like she's never seen me before. I think it may, like, genuinely negatively impact our relationship.
There's never something that I've seen that you haven't seen unless it's, like, anime or just, like, maybe just anime.
Yeah, it feels weird, man. I don't
or,
like it.
Like, some, like, early film from, like, the turn of the century. Think similar to Edward Scissorhands. Not so similar, but just think... Think monsters. Think little critters.
Oh, Gremlins.
Gremlins, number 10.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of other movies that I watch every year.
This is one that a lot of people watch every year. A Beloved Family. A franchise about a family.
I was gonna say Christmas Vacation.
Yeah, that's number 6.
Yeah, I was gonna say Christmas Vacation.
You got a lot of them. Do you want me to just run down?
Yeah,
full
hit me,
list?
hit me.
I'll go from 15 on up to 1. Number 15 is Trading Places.
Yeah.
Number 14 is The Santa Claus. 13 is Scrooged. Number 12, Edward Scissorhands. Number 11, Bad Santa. Number 10, Gremlins. Number 9, Elf. Number 8, Miracle on 34th Street. Number 7, A Christmas Story. Number 6, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. Number 5, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Number 4, Home Alone. Number 3, A Christmas Carol from 1951.
Ah, oh, fuck
number
me.
Number 2, Die Hard. And number 1, It's a Wonderful Life.
So I missed like 3 or 4 of those.
Yeah. No, you got most of them. And actually,
the Christmas Carol
different...
one hurts. Like, that one just hurts. Like, I should have just guessed A Christmas Carol in general.
Well, you did. You said Scrooge.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, like some of the other lists I came upon, like Rotten Tomatoes or whatever, it was way more, like, weighed heavily towards, like, that kind of shit, like, stuff from, like, the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, which right. probably are better films, but, like, this felt like a list generated by the people, the masses. Right. Like, we got Home Alone up high, we got Gremlins on there, we got Die Hard number two, like, yeah, this is the right list.
This is the list we need to go with.
Even if it's not, it wouldn't be my list, although I would have some of these on mine, for sure.
I would definitely have some of those on mine. Like, as soon as December hits, my media intake changes drastically. It's Hallmark movies and a set like 15 Christmas films.
Yep. No, I don't live that life. There's a few I watch like right before the holiday and I'm good.
Yeah.
And they're not, most of them are not explicit Christmas movies, which, I mean, segue.
Yeah. Perfect segue. We're wrapping up. So housekeeping stuff. First off, that segue, baby. Patreon. Our Patreon, patreon.com/sourcenotfoundpodcast. Check us out. Or just search on Patreon, Source Not Found Podcast. This month, we are going to do a top five ep. And by that, we mean we are both bringing our top five explicitly non-Christmas Christmas movies to the party.
So if you want to get in on that action, come on by the Patreon.
Yeah, please.
That
check
and a lot
us
of
out.
Other fun bonus episodes, one every month.
Yeah, yeah. Last month's Vampire Baseball is absolutely batshit crazy.
That was
and
fun.
A good time. All of the other social medias, we are Source Not Found Podcast or Source Not Found Pod. You can email us at sourcenotfoundpod@gmail.com. Please do send us, you know, how you feel about Scrooged or what are your favorite Christmas movies or non-Christmas Christmas movies, whatever. We just like to hear from people.
You can also check us out on YouTube where we archive the show as well as playthroughs of games I've been streaming on Twitch, which speaking of, twitch.tv/LejeuneBug.
And we have to mention our theme song.
Yeah. As always, music by Saint Coelacanth.
Thank you so much.
Still, like, so excited about the new theme song.
Yeah, it fucking slaps. Thank you all so much for listening. Thank you for, if you watch this movie with us, thanks. It's kind of a rough one until the cartoony bits at the end. But with that, you should probably go ahead and check your toilets for those weird metal skeleton hands that the Ghost of Christmas Future has. Looks very uncomfortable. However, if you watch Carol Kane say that she's going to fix your mouth so it can't hold soup, you may not have to worry about it because you'll poop your pants.
Check your pants for doo-doo. Don't check the toilet.
Yeah.
You've already,
after all of these great lines in this movie, check your pants for duty.
Check your home bar for tab.
Actually, that's a really good point. Email us if you've had tab. Tell me what it fucking tastes like. I'm genuinely curious. This is not a bit. This is not a joke. I really want to know what tab tastes like.
And if you got a Shasta nearby, throw that in too. I'm curious.
Definitely. Or a Moxie.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
He says, God bless us, everyone, Brandon.
God, oh.